like to thank you very much anyway for being everything that we expect Vancouver to be.
Well, hello everybody. You are listening to the All Things Led Zeppelin podcast, Zep Fan. My name is Mark McFall, and this is episode 9. Today joining us is Trenton Welters. Trenton is a Canadian native and as a young man saw many amazing concerts back in the day. And not only that, he made the wise decision to record some of these amazing concerts. And of course, one of these concerts was the Mighty Led Zeppelin at the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver, August 19th, 1971. Trenton is here and will share his experience of taping this incredible evening, and also, if we are lucky, he will talk about the other bands he recorded. Trenton, thank you for joining me. How are you doing today?
Oh, great. Thanks. Thanks
good.
A lot.
Good. Well, thanks for joining me. I always love talking to someone who saw Zeppelin or really witnessed a lot of these concerts back in the day, not just Zeppelin, because I feel the concert experience in the 70s is a lot different than 80s, 90s, and now. Right, there's a lot more production involved, and I think just the music was just expanding back then. But before I begin, could you give us a little background on, you know, where you live at and, you know, some of the concerts you've seen?
Oh, well, living in the Vancouver area, there it seemed to be a popular place. A lot of the bands seem to, well, so they said anyway, they seem to, to like to come to Vancouver. And although there was a few that never made it across the border, you know, with the customs and things. There was a few canceled concerts back in the day. I don't know whether it was drugs or equipment they didn't declare or different things, but yeah, Vancouver was a good scene. It was, I don't know, the West Coast, and people would come up from California, you know, the bands from down there. And,
right.
You know, we had a lot of good shows here.
Yeah, and I think Led Zeppelin ran into that same thing you were talking about. They were going to do a show up in Vancouver, and I think they moved it to Seattle in 72, it was, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if that was his voice problem with Plant or what happened. I've heard different stories about that.
Right.
Somebody was sick or something, so I don't know. Yeah, but there's a famous story about the poster for that concert. Have you ever heard about that?
Right. No, talk to me a little bit about that one. So you're referring to the Vancouver 1971, this beautiful green poster. I believe it has the blimp on there and the four faces. One of my favorite concert posters, by the way.
Yeah, I had that for a few years, and then I sold it. I kind of kicked myself now, but yeah.
What's the story behind it?
That poster?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I would go out the day after the concert, or sometimes right at, you know, some of these stores that had posters, like boutiques and clothing stores and things. I would go before the concert started, you know, like about 5:30, and kind of knock on doors along the main streets and see if they would give up the posters they had taped in their window or thumbtack on a wall or something. And I started collecting posters as much as, you know, recording and stuff I was doing. I collected the Georgia Strait, which is kind of a famous newspaper from Vancouver.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Kind of an anti-establishment newspaper that ran for a long time. And, yes, I've always had a thing since I was little about sort of collecting things.
Right. And so what other posters have you had besides the Led Zeppelin one?
Oh, geez, they're so numerous. I've got some Fillmore posters, and I had posters from England that my cousin got for me. He lived down below London. And, you know, I don't know, everything from Rod Stewart to Moody Blues to, you know, of course, Led Zeppelin, different, you know, the Creedence Clearwater. And I like blues. I had, you know, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee and Howlin' Wolf and different, you know, posters. Right. Yeah, so I had a lot of stuff. I had a big cardboard box at one time just full of posters. So,
yeah. It's a great scene back then, too.
Yeah. A great artist. Oh, Bob Massey was the local poster designer that he's sort of very well known. He turned out some really wonderful posters. And
well, it's pretty amazing how much those posters go for nowadays, especially that Zeppelin one. I'm guessing it's probably about $5,000, if not more. So when you're collecting them or asking to get it out of the boutique, I don't think you're thinking, wow, in 40 years, this is going to be worth $5,000, right? I'm going to put thumbtacks in it, and I'm going to put it up on the wall. You don't think of any of that stuff.
Well, I actually had an old sort of a hippie van, and it was like a 1956 Dodge panel van.
Right.
And I put plywood inside and had it fixed up, and I started my extra posters. I stuck them on, I glued them on the walls and the ceiling and everything.
Your van wallpaper.
And so, yeah, when I sold the van, that all went with it. So, yeah, those things come and go.
I know. It's amazing. But we never think about that. I mean, as a kid, I used to collect little things here and there, but you never think of the value of it in 30, 40 years.
No.
And I know you've recorded this Led Zeppelin show. Did you record other shows in the area? Other bands than Led Zeppelin?
I mean, I had all kinds of stuff. Moody Blues, the Pink Floyd, The Who.
Nice.
Deep Purple. I had quite a few bands.
What prompted you to bring a recorder with you instead of just going and enjoying the show? What made you, go, I'm going to bring a recorder with me?
You know, I don't know. I just, it just struck me, and I never recorded anything before. I didn't even have much in the way of fancy home stereo or anything at that time. I moved out of the house. I was living with some friends of mine in Vancouver, and had gotten a job, and there was just five of us that shared a big house, and I don't know, then we got the Led Zeppelin concert was announced, and we were getting tickets for that, and I guess the thought came to me, because there was bootleg albums out, Bob Dylan and different things like that. Of course we had the Pure Blues album that was bootleg.
Right,
in
classic
the year before
Canada show for sure.
The TV album. Yeah, right. I've got a copy of that. And so that's probably what the made me think of it. And so I thought, what'll I do? I didn't have a cassette recorder or any kind of recorder, so I thought I'd rent one, and there was a local, there's kind of a high-end stereo store called Commercial Electronics in Vancouver. They were like a Bang & Olufsen dealer, and they had a rental department. I think it was mainly geared to maybe like schools and things like that would rent audio, visual, and music apparatus and all that. But anyway, I went down there, and they had this German reel-to-reel. It's called a Ure, U-H-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Ure 4000 report, and they were sort of well known in Europe. The BBC journalists used them, and other different journalists around Europe used them, and they became popular in the States too. There's actually quite a few sold, and it's a small, it's sort of the size of a shoebox, and so anyway, it's bulky enough. You can't just walk through the ticket gates without somebody seeing it. So the plan I came up with was I had a strap on the carrying handle, and I put it around my neck, and the tape recorder hung down my backbone, and I wore a big sort of a buckskin leather coat over top.
Yeah.
And when we were outside the stadium or the concert hall there, we waited for the crowd to sort of, fill up and that, and it was busy at the turnstiles, and then my friends and I would kind of walk through, and actually I think I undid the front of my coat to sort of show I wasn't hiding anything, and I just sort of sauntered through, and they kind of were right behind me, and so nobody would see the bulge in my coat, and I don't know, I just handed the fellow my ticket and got in there, and that was
nice.
That, and we were down on the floor. I was no, to this day, I can't remember where the, because you had to watch out for the fellows with the mixing board or whatever you call it,
right,
that would be about a third of the way back from the stage. And, if you stood up and had a microphone, they could kind of see in the lights what you were doing. So I just kind of held it at my face level and in front of me. But I had the tape recorder on the floor. It was a bit of a problem running it, because I had to sort of bend down with a flashlight because it was dark, and I had the tape ready to go, and Led Zeppelin came out and they started playing, and I turned it on and stood back up and had the microphone. And I guess a couple of songs went by, and I went down to the floor and looked at the machine with my flashlight, and here the tape had jumped off the out of the recording slot, and it hadn't done anything. It just fell apart, so the tape flew all over. So I missed the first two songs. I had to rewind the tape and get going, but I got all the rest of it. But
right.
Yeah, it was a bit of a learning experience because I just kind of rented it and right. had, you know, an hour or so to sort of fiddle with it before I went down there. And I took three tapes with me. And I recorded it at the fastest speed for the best quality. I knew that much about recording.
Good.
And so I would have to sort of estimate when a song was going to end. I'd look at the tape and see if it was getting near the end, because I would have to flip it over and, you know, reattach the tape and that. So, yeah, it was kind of a, it's like a pit stop, you know, having to flip the tape over and sort it out and get going without missing any of the music. And anyway, yeah. So that was a bit of fun.
But, very cool.
Yeah, we never had any problems with there. My friends were around me and they would help out if I, you know, needed it and that. So.
And was that the first concert you've recorded? Was the Led Zeppelin
yeah,
before you
yeah.
did? Okay, so
yeah.
that was like kind of the beta or getting used to recording. Then from there, you'd record Pink Floyd, The Who, Moody Blues. Now, for those other concerts, did you also rent equipment or did you eventually just buy a tape deck?
No, I went out and I bought it was a Sony, I think it was called TC-125. Doesn't matter, it's just a little portable cassette recorder. And it had I thought it was maybe advertising baloney, but it was said on the brochure that they had a split head mic that would mm-hmm. do stereo. Well, you know, on a concert on the floor, you're basically just getting mono anyway, because all the speakers are just coming at you. But it did work out quite well at a Pink Floyd concert where they had the speakers around.
Right. The quadraphonic sound they called, or whatever they called it.
The quadraphonic was big then. Yeah. 1971.
Right.
And, that actually, when you play it back, you can hear it go from the left side to the right side and back again. So that worked out good for that. But I used that for a few years, that little Sony, and then I got a tap on my shoulder at this concert in 1972, and they said they were going to have to keep my recorder until the show was over and I could get it back. And so that kind of put a stop to it.
Right, because it's no
longer
fun.
A little bit brazen at that. Yeah. And they were talking, you know, they were being more strict, I guess you'd say, people taking photos or recording it all. Yeah, so I kind of stopped.
Which is a lot different now. Now everybody films and takes photos. So you mentioned getting caught at one of the shows. Now, Led Zeppelin manager Peter Grant was always known for, you know, busting bootleggers or people recording the show and breaking microphones and such. It being such an early show, did you have any awareness of Peter Grant or who he was, and there could be altercations if he saw you recording?
No. I had no idea. I never heard that story.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But funny enough, the fellow that stopped me recording in 72, I had a good look at him, and I don't think he recognized me, because since high school, I got a bit of a beard and long hair, and it was a fellow I went to high school with. And he had a job with the local sound in Vancouver. I think it was Kel DeYoung. He did a lot of concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, he was working for them, and he's the one that came up and tapped me on the shoulder. So maybe that's why, you know, I didn't have any, you know, big problems. And he just gave me my machine back. He said he was going to erase the one I had in the thing, but I recorded the backup band. I can't remember what it was now, but I had that cassette in my pocket, and I had a fresh one. So actually, he didn't really get much.
And what show were you recording when you got tapped on the
Pardon
shoulder?
Pardon me?
What show were you recording?
72. Oh, what show?
What band, yeah, when you got tapped on the shoulder.
You know, I'm trying to think now. I think it was a Moody Blues, a second one. Second time they were here. Yeah, I think that's the show I was at.
What mics did you use to record the Led Zeppelin show? Do you remember?
Well, when I rented the machine, that it came with their own brand, like a Ewer microphone.
Mm-hmm.
This was the being made in Germany. It had the DIN. Do you know? Are you familiar with those cables?
No, not too familiar.
Oh, they use like a round plug with maybe four or five pins that stick out.
Right. Is it an XLR
European
plug
system?
Or a European? Okay, so it's a little bit different, I would imagine.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Blaupunkt radios have them in cars, you know, at the back. If you've
right.
ever,
Right, so it's a little bit different than the headphone jack plug.
Yeah, and all it's all a bit different. Like the this thing had a space for 5 flashlight batteries,
mm-hmm.
and I had some fresh batteries in there. But there's also a power pack that goes in the space where the batteries go for home use. Like for household current. And, yeah. So.
And how many batteries did the system take?
5.
5, and the D batteries or C batteries?
Yeah, the D batteries.
Yeah, nice big heavy ones back in the day. Reminds me of the boom boxes from the 80s. And so what's your recollection of the actual show? Do you remember anything from the Led Zeppelin show?
Well, I remember that Robert Plant had a great voice, that he was really on his game. Jimmy Page, of course, like I'd never seen him use the bow, like a fiddle. God, that was one of my bonuses of recording that show, was having that sequence with the bow on there. And plus the medley that they do, Whole Lotta Love medley.
Yeah. '73, they toned down the Whole Lotta Love medley a bit, and by '71 they were still just on fire and very experimental. So that medley was pretty amazing. And being a video collector like myself, is everybody films the bow. So every Led Zeppelin footage you have, Jimmy's always on the bow because that's classic. And even seeing the movie, the song remains the same. It's like, oh, the bow's coming up. You know, there was no internet back then, so the hype of going, he plays with the bow, you know, and when that comes up, I'm sure it's pretty exciting. And the way it goes into Dazed and Confused, it could end with the drums. It must have blown your mind.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great concert.
Yeah, out of all your shows, what are the best sounding shows you have? Because I have to say, first, Trenton, that the samples that you've shared with us of this show is just spectacular. Like you said, Robert is just on fire. The vocals sound really great. Are all your shows sound like this?
Yeah, I'd say most of them. Some of them I had some problems at the sound. But yeah, most of them, they turned out pretty good. You know, I thought it was fine.
Right.
My ears might not be the pickiest as far as music goes, but I was happy with what I was getting.
And I would have to think the Pink Floyd would sound pretty good too. I'm not a Pink Floyd collector by any means, but I know the shows are not as rowdy as a Led Zeppelin one, and people are just really into it. So I think the atmosphere and the sound must have been captured pretty well on that tape.
Yeah, that was a good tape. Yeah, I had a good run of music there, and too bad it was only about a year and a half. But anyway, there was a lot of concerts coming and going.
Well, was that the only time you saw Led Zeppelin?
No, I saw them the year before, the 70 concert.
Oh.
I saw that one too.
Oh, that was the Mudslide, the PB.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The PB one,
Right, Everybody Feel All Right. That's all I remember from that. I mean, just putting on that record and the first thing you hear is, Everybody Feel All Right? It's like, let's get it going. It's great.
Yeah. Well, that was right off the soundboard, I guess. That's a good recording.
Hey, what do you recall from the 1970 Led Zeppelin show? not much, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Don't you love it? You're asking. It was just only a good 50 show. Years ago. You could do it, Trent.
yeah. No, it was a good show. There's no real problems or anything. Yeah, just I loved Led Zeppelin, and I really enjoyed it. And good atmosphere. The people were good. There wasn't any crazy fans throwing bottles or anything. That happened a few years later.
Right.
Stones concert we had or something.
Wow. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Vancouver 73 show plant was given acid or something. So they ended up cutting the show short and he had to go to the hospital. I'd have to look up this, but I'm pretty sure the story that's what happened. But they always seem to perform one great on the West Coast, but Vancouver, Seattle, of course, LA. I mean, just they really like it out here. These tapes obviously are 50 plus years old now. And, you know, now you started sharing them with collectors a few years ago. So what prompted you to revisit the tapes and share it with us?
I guess my age, I don't know. I've had these sort of tucked away and nobody's seen them for, like you say, 50 years. And I'm kind of going through a few things and my possessions and looking and thinking, what are my own kids going to do with this stuff,
right,
you know, later on?
Exactly.
And I'm thinking there might not be any reel-to-reels around. So if I, you know, the reels, it might be better if I digitize them while I, you know, think about it. And the cassettes too. I mean, there's still a few machines of those around, but there's still reel-to-reels around, but I don't expect my kids to go out and buy one.
Just to see what's on there. What a dad tape, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So I was digitizing them and that, and I thought, well, I'll share it with somebody and maybe put it out there. Yeah.
And from that point on, you end up on a podcast talking about it. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was lucky with the tape too, the tape when I decided to digitize it, I was asking around and, the local recording studio, because it's a different track on that. You were at it's a half track machine.
Yeah.
So it records one direction on half the tape and the other direction on the other half of the tape, whereas the North American and like the Japanese home electronic reel-to-reels, most of them record on like a track 1 and 3 and then 2 and 4. They jump over that way.
Yeah.
4-track. So after I recorded this concert, the Led Zeppelin in 71, I'd only rented the machine for the day and I had to take it back by 9:30 the next morning or something. So I took it back and then I had this laying around and I thought, well, I want to transfer it over to a cassette or something like that. So I borrowed somebody's, you know, like a Tiak or a Kaya, somebody, a friend's reel to reel. And that didn't work out very well. You had to turn off one channel because it was getting music going one way and then the other way on the other track. As you can visualize that, I was picking up both. When you flip over the tape, you're on the top half or whatever, the bottom half. And so that was like that for years. I had these the concert on a cassette, but you had to turn the balance off to one side. So it didn't sound funny.
So you recorded it, had to take back the recorder or the reel-to-reel. So you eventually transferred it on a traditional reel-to-reel, which didn't give you the greatest effect, but that's when you originally heard it, right? So it took you this long.
Right.
And then you recently transferred this. Did you have to go out and buy a new machine or rent one?
I bought a Ewer, the same model I have.
Oh, wow.
I looked around on and they're going up in price now. I looked on like eBay and different things like that. And then one day I happened to do a search in British Columbia here. There's a kind of a Craigslist thing. It's not Craigslist. It's called Kijiji. And it's in the smaller communities. And it's a lesser known kind of a Craigslist application. And here this fellow is selling the same machine I wanted. And it was, like about $40. It was his dad's, and I guess his dad had passed away. And so anyway, I arranged to pay him, and he boxed it up and put it on a FedEx truck, and it came down to me. And this, I was completely blown away. This thing was, I think his dad might have used it like a dozen times or something. It was like no scratches, no,
wow.
The paint, everything was perfect. Even 50 years later, the little rubber drive bands were still good. And this thing was like in mint condition. And wow. So that's what I used to play the tapes again.
So what was your thoughts when you played them? Did you think, wow, this is a lot better than the cassette I had? Could you tell a noticeable difference?
It was better getting the full full track of sound. And I was lucky too. I was just going to say a minute ago about the tape itself. It's this Ampex tape.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked on the internet, and with a lot of these old reel-to-reel tapes, you have to, they absorb moisture over the years. And they can not be the best to on playback now. But these Ampex, the one model of Ampex tape I got, as I found out on the internet, was like one of the good ones. It was a special vinyl, and it didn't absorb moisture. And anyway, you didn't have to bake it because the other tapes that were around, you have to put it in a low heat oven, like for about 3 hours or something, and bake it. And
that would scare me to death to have to actually put tapes into anything with heat, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think you're in a good area being on the West Coast, you know, because you're not dealing with a lot of humidity or any of that stuff. Because I've talked to other people who have films that are more in, you know, the East Coast and keep them in attics and stuff. And they just, you know, because of the humidity and the heat, they just kind of dissipate. So I think that's also a plus as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they survive remarkably well. Yeah, even my cassettes, they're fine too. My old cassettes from that era.
Yeah. So other than the Led Zeppelin, because I know the Led Zeppelin, you advertise on Facebook, and from my understanding, it's now sold. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, a collector bought it. Yeah.
So some lucky collector has that reel. What about the other recordings, the Pink Floyds, the Moody Blues, the Who? Did you ever let out those, or are you selling those?
I did sell some of them.
Oh, cool.
Some of the people that were after me on the Led Zeppelin tape, and I got talking to them, they found out I had these other ones. So I have sold a few of the other cassettes, and I digitized them.
Yeah.
Also, before I, mind you, they wanted to hear what, you know, samples of what they sounded like. So I had to digitize them anyway, just to send that off to them.
Well, if it's anything like the Led Zeppelin, they're in good shape too, because I mean, that Led Zeppelin show really captures that show really good. And like I said, Plant's vocals are just amazing. They totally stand out. Page sounds amazing. Bonham, it's really good show. You did a great job, Trenton.
Oh, thanks. But yeah, I'm just looking at some here. I've got Curved Air with Edgar Winter, one show, Canned Heat, that was 72. Quicksilver with Captain Beefheart, that was in 71. The Birds, 1971. I had a Deep Purple, and lots of different things.
Where was the Pink Floyd and the Who from? What year and what venue?
I don't have it right. I think it was 71.
Okay.
It was a small, it's called the Gardens at the local. It's close to the Coliseum where the Led Zeppelin show was, but it's a smaller building, more intimate, sort of, I guess you'd say.
Led Zeppelin fans, audio collectors are very fanatic, as you, I'm sure you found once you put that on Facebook and advertised it. And I think Who and Pink Floyd also has that following as well. So I'm sure you had a lot of interest around all that stuff. And maybe you were second guessing, should I have ever put this online, dealing with the people I dealt with?
Yeah.
but trust me, I mean, we thank you so much, because you really bring this stuff to light, and you really captured this band, because back then, you know, not a lot of bands recorded themselves. It's not like now where everyone's recording it. They just went out and played, especially Led Zeppelin. So you really did a fantastic job. And as fans, we can't thank you enough for that, Trenton.
Oh, well, yeah, no problem. Yeah. Thanks. It was, this is one of my youthful exuberances, getting out and doing all this stuff. Yeah.
I didn't ask you, but how old were you when you were recording this in the 71, 72 area? How old were you?
Oh, I was like 20, 22.
Very good.
So, yeah.
Amazing. And now we're 50 years later, right? It's amazing how quickly that goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I got married a couple of years after that and started the family and all that. So, a lot of the stuff got put in the boxes and tucked away.
Yeah, exactly. All the reel-to-reel, all the cassettes, all the hobby stuff gets thrown in the closet in the storage. Listen, Trent, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and kind of explaining, you know, talking about the process of recording this and actually sharing with us. One of the great things about this show itself, as you probably found out, is the fact that they did Gallows Pole at this show. And, you know, this is, you know, they didn't do that I don't think in Northern California or Northern America at all. They did it in the UK a couple times. So it's a very rare song, and it's actually a little bit different than the way they did it back then. So, you know, you captured that. And again, we can't thank you enough. Other than that, I have nothing else to say. I mean, I just want to say thanks. Oh. I mean, I just want to say thanks again for coming on the show and sharing your stories. Is there any last words you have on the show or anything else you want to share with us?
Well, you know, I found a few things out that I didn't even know, like you're just saying about the gallows pole, until I got talking to, you know, different collectors and that, and they informed me of this. I didn't even realize about that being rare. Plus the Stairway to Heaven. I think Vancouver, I was told, was the first venue that song was sung in North America.
Right, because
wasn't the world or anything, but North America. You know, they'd done it, in Britain and that. But
right,
yeah. So yeah. Anyway, it was all good.
You think about when you're there, right? You're not thinking, wow, they're doing Gallows Pole.
No.
You just don't know. You're just recording the show going, wow, this is great. This sounds amazing. And then, you know, it takes 50 years later to research and being like, wow, look what I captured. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, while you're taping, it's sort of a bit of an anxious thing, up and down, looking at it, making sure it's right. Well, the other thing I never mentioned before, that this, you were reel to reel, the early ones like mine, it didn't have an automatic recording level like the cassettes do.
Oh.
And so it had a view meter and, you know, it would go up into the red. So there was a knob and I had to go down on the floor with a flashlight. And if they're really getting loud, the needle would be up in the red. Of course, you're getting distortion. So I had to turn back the input knob. And so you're constantly, you know, where with the newer machines, it's all done electronically.
Yeah.
It keeps the level from going into distortion. But that was one problem with using that. But
right. Anyway,
it worked out.
Yeah. So what you're saying is during the show, like you felt, oh, it's really loud, I'm going to check the levels. And then you may or may have not gone down there and just changed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's kind of like today with people with their phones. They're out recording things and people are saying, why don't you just put the phone away and enjoy what you're either listening or watching. And I mean, I really enjoyed the show, but you know, you are sort of doing two things at once. So it's not like you're just sort of,
and you don't really enjoy
it completely.
Right. And you don't really enjoy it until you actually listen to it. Then it's like, wow, look what I captured, because you are focused on something else. You are focusing on the levels of holding
the
microphone.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So it's definitely going to pull that. I have a friend who videotaped all these concerts in the Bay Area, you know, in the 90s. And back then they had the big 8mm camera, a black and white viewfinder. So you're not really enjoying the show at all. You're seeing it through a black and white viewfinder. You're not focusing on the music because you don't want to get caught holding this. But the document you created is kind of where you look at it and go, oh, wow, I captured this. Look what they did. And you see it over and over again. I've always been the opposite where I just, you know, like to enjoy the show. And I agree with you with all these people on the phones nowadays. It's like, just enjoy. That's why you're there. It's music.
Yeah, right, right.
Very good.
I agree.
All right, Trent. Well, again, I thank you. I'm sure all these audio fans thank you for letting this out, and we definitely appreciate it. Other than that, have a wonderful day. Enjoy your holidays, and be safe, okay?
Okay, you too. Take care. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, anytime. Okay. Thanks. Bye. Well, thank you again, Trenton, for joining us and sharing your experience. And again, thank you for taping this amazing show with these rare songs on it. So it's definitely appreciated. That is it. I think that's a wrap. Episode 9 in the books all done. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, search Zep Fan, search Led Zeppelin. It'll be there. And if you don't mind, please leave a rating. Please leave a review. It's always greatly appreciated. If you need to reach out to me for any reasons, contact at zepfan.com. And that is it. The night is over, or the night is young, depending where you're at. Enjoy yourself. Listen to some Led Zeppelin. Turn it loud. Have a good one. Bye.